Hare Hare
Having heard of a spiritual master's stay here, Abhay, bringing his son with him, had traveled from Bombay just to have a darshan of a spiritual master. To see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was always an occasion for jubilation, but to see him in Vrindavan was an added perfection. This meeting with his beloved guide and friend was different from the time in 1932, when Abhay had seen him on the Vrindavan Parikrama. Now Abhay was no longer sitting anonymously in the back of a room. Now he was a bona fide disciple, recognized as the Kavi, who had written the praiseworthy poem and essay. The young man who listened well, the devotee who had helped the Allahabad Mutt and who had established the Mutt in Bombay. Already on his visit, Abhay had an occasion to be alone with his spiritual master, who had remembered Abhay's son and presented him with a small bundhi, jacket. And now, as they walked together alone on the bank of Radhakunda, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta turned and spoke confidentially to Abhay. There had been some quarreling amongst his leading disciples in Calcutta, he said, and this distressed him very much. Even now, in Vrindavan, it weighed heavily on his mind. Some of his disciples had been fighting over who would use various rooms and facilities at the Gaudiya Mutt headquarters in Calcutta. These devotees were all members of the same Mutt, and the building was for propagating Krishna consciousness under the leadership of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Yet even in their spiritual master's presence, they were quarreling. Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are supposed to be free from envy of any creature. What to speak of envy of one another? If they were to fight now, what would they do after the spiritual master passed away? Abhay had no part in these matters and did not even know the details or who was involved. But as he listened to his spiritual master, he also became distressed. Right, he's hearing these things and he's not worried who's involved. What are the details? Right? In other words, it's not interested in gossip, so that's not the point. He's just listening, what is the point being made? What is the principle that is the problem, this lack of cooperation, this lack of, you know, quarreling over facility because this room gets the morning sun, or this one is too hot because it gets the afternoon sun, or this one has that extra window for air, or this one is closer to the bathroom, or this one is, you know, too busy, everybody walks in front while this one's more quiet, or all this kind of stuff is like, you know, what's the problem? Right? The Prabhupada wasn't into detail, didn't need to know who was involved. That's not what's important. Deeply concerned, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said to Abhay, Agun Jvalbe, there will be fire. One day there will be fire in the Chaitanya Gaudiya, Calcutta Gaudiya Mutt, and that fire of party interest would spread and destroy. Abhay heard but did not know what to make of it. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had fought so long and boldly to establish that anyone of any birth could be elevated to become a Brahmana, a sannyasi, or a Vaishnava. But if his followers became contaminated by a little wealth and the desire for prestige, thereby showing themselves to be still low-class men despite their training and purification, then his mission would be disrupted. If in the name of religion they became attached to ease, position, and prestige, it could only mean that they had failed to grasp the teachings of their spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada, he was lamenting that these men are simply after the stones and bricks of the building. He condemned, he was very, very sorry. When we were living in a rented house, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, if we could collect 200 or 300 rupees, we were living very nicely at Ultadanga. We were happier then. But since we have been given this marble palace in Bagh Bazar, there is friction between our men. Who will occupy this room? Who will occupy that room? Who will be the proprietor of this room? Everyone planning in different ways. It would be better to take the marble from the walls and secure money. If I could do this and print books, that would be better. Abhai felt his spiritual master speaking to him in urgency, as if asking him to help or warning him to avert a disaster. But what could he do? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta then said directly to Abhai, Amar Icha Chila Kichu Bhai Karana. I had a desire to print some books. If you ever get money, print books. Standing by Radha Kund and beholding his spiritual master, Abhai felt the words deeply enter his own life. If you ever get money, print books. Yeah. So his point is that he's worked so hard that everybody can be involved. Simply someone has that sincerity, they simply take up Krishna consciousness. And taking up this Krishna consciousness, then they become elevated to the platform of devotees. Being elevated on that platform of devotees, then it's okay. See, you girls, if you want to move around, that's okay. But it should be something that, you know, you're focusing on here. Moving around makes it easier to listen, or, you know, it's something and interact with another girl or something like that. But just to move around, just to move around, because just you felt like it, then is a distraction. You understand? You feel more comfortable sitting next to this, then do that. But walk in, sit down there. But don't keep getting up, then go here, then get up and go here, then get up and go here. You understand? Otherwise, it's a distraction. Okay, now you guys shouldn't laugh, because at least they're awake and getting up and moving over and like that. You can't get up and move if you're asleep, right? Yes. Okay, so like that. So then he's pointing out is that then they've come up to this level, they've advanced so much, but then now they're going back and fighting over rooms and this and that, missing the point that the building is for promoting Krishna consciousness. So then that means then it shows their low birth again. Right? So that's always an important element, like Roma Harshana Sutta. So Sutta means the father's a Kshatriya, mother's a Brahmin. It's, Pratiloma, it's against the grain. Right? Father's Brahmin, mother's Kshatriya, okay, but father's Kshatriya, mother's Brahmin, that's not as good. So then you get a Sutta. So a Sutta can either act as a Brahmin, act as a Kshatriya, you know, or act as a Shudra, as a charioteer, or can act as an outcast of a hunter that traps small animals. Right? Any of these mentalities could be present in such a child. So now we see Roma Harshana Sutta. Now he was behaving as a Brahmin. He knew all the Puranas. All the Puranas are basically spoken by him. When it says Sutu Vacha, generally means him. The Bhagavatam is spoken by his son, Ugrashrava, but otherwise, basically all the other Puranas that I know of are spoken by the father. So he was, you know, the disciple of Vyas. He was in charge, given charge of protection of the Puranas. And he knew all the Puranas. He would speak to Puranas. And I think they're all spoken at Naimisharanya to the sages there. Somehow or another, all the Puranas are spoken there. So then he's speaking one day, and then Balaram comes himself. And when he comes into the assembly, everyone stands up except Roma Harsha Nasuta, because there's a rule that whoever's sitting on the Vyasasan doesn't have to stand up if, you know, elevated people come into the, you know, to the arena for hearing the class, because otherwise there's always some elevated person. But what he didn't consider was, okay, that's an elevated person, but if they're, if there's just a little bit this way and that way, but if they're extremely elevated, then you might make another condition, you know, consideration, especially when it's God himself, you know, who is the, you know, the Lord of, means in other words, Vyasadeva is his representative. So he didn't stand up. And out of this pride, it wasn't just giving the class, and it wasn't just, you know, it's natural, wow, Krishna's come, or Balaram's come, and this is so wonderful, and he's going on. It's a matter of he's thinking, no, I'm on the Vyasa, I don't have to stand up, because Balaram came. So just that he thought that means he should have stood up. He was so absorbed like that. But then everybody stood up, so the class would have stopped anyway, so then you stand up, right? So then Balaram picked up a piece of blade of grass and walked over to him, you know, sitting on his Vyasasan, and touched him with the blade of grass, just touched his heart and killed him. And so then afterwards, before that is, he's giving the class to all these sages. But after this incident, then they're all talking, well, what to do? He was from a low-born family, so it's, you know, it's understandable he's going to act like a Suta. You understand? So that's the problem here, is we come from so many backgrounds, whatever the backgrounds are. But by taking up Krishna consciousness, one acts as devotees. But if one doesn't act as that, and just like this, fighting over rooms or other stupid things like that, then it just shows the low birth, right? That's all. So we have to always be very conscious of that. So not that he's worried about the low birth, he's worried about lack of cooperation, means Krishna consciousness is not going to spread because the preaching is not going to happen, right? Does that make sense? So that's his worry. But just, you know, the cause of they're able to be able to fight like this and forget about this is because of their low birth. December 1936. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was in poor health at Jagannath Puri. Abhai was in Bombay, and he wanted to write his Guru Maharaj a letter. He is a little kind upon me, Abhai thought. He will understand my requests, and he began to write. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances at your lotus feet. You have got many disciples, and I am one of them, but they are doing direct service to you. Some of them are brahmacharis, some of them are sannyasis, but I am a householder. I cannot. Sometimes I give monetary help, while I cannot give you direct service. Is there any particular service I can do? 2 weeks later, Abhai received a reply. I am fully confident that you can explain in English our thoughts and arguments to the people who are not conversant with the languages of the other members. This will do much good to yourself as well as your audience. I have every hope that you can turn yourself into a very good English preacher. If you can serve the mission to inculcate the novel impression of Lord Chaitanya's teaching in the people in general, as well as philosophers and religionists. Right? So he says the people in general, like that, but also philosophers and religionists, because these philosophers and religionists, they are influencing the general people. Does that make sense? So the philosophers, they come up with a philosophy, espouse so many things, and at the same time say nothing. But people think it sounds nice, it influences them. The religionists, then they're into not so much philosophy, but into the rituals, you know, the whole thing of sentiment and having faith and, you know, and that being the motive and all that. And they speak very, very strongly and make people either feel very inspired or very bad at not cooperating, right? And so then they have a very strong influence like that, bringing people very strong emotions and everything like this. So if these two can be understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and take it up, they're already influential. So that influence then will be used for Krishna rather than for their own purposes. So then it will be, you know, very, very special. Does that make sense? So that's why he includes all of them. Abhay at once recognized this to be the same instruction he had received at their first meeting in 1922. He took it as a confirmation. There was no doubt as to the purpose of his life. What his spiritual master had said in Calcutta in 1922 had not been a chance remark, nor had it been a chance meeting. The instruction was the same, quote, "Turn yourself into a very good English preacher. This will do much good to yourself as well as your audience." Srila Bhaktisiddhanta passed away from this mortal world on January 1st, 1937. He had been spending his last days reading Chaitanya Charitamrita and chanting on his beads. When a doctor had visited him, wanting to give him an injection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had protested, "Why are you disturbing me in this way? Simply chant Hare Krishna, that's all." Amongst his last words to his disciples were, so he had a last, I'm not sure if he wrote this or if it was spoken, but it was documented. "I advise all to preach the teachings of Rupa Raghunath, disciples of Lord Chaitanya, with all energy and resources. Our ultimate goal shall be to become the dust of the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Raghunath Goswamis. You should all work conjointly under the guidance of your spiritual master, with a view to serve the absolute knowledge, the personality of Godhead. You should live somehow or other without any quarrel in this mortal world, only for the service of Godhead. Do not, please, give up the service of Godhead, in spite of all dangers, all criticisms, and all discomforts. Do not be disappointed, for most people in the world do not serve the personality of Godhead. Do not give up your own service, which is your everything and all. Neither reject the process of chanting and hearing of the transcendental holy name of Godhead. You should always chant the transcendental name of Godhead with patience and forbearance like a tree, and humbleness like a straw. There are many amongst you who are well qualified and able workers. We have no other desire whatsoever." In his last days, he had remained fully conscious and had given instructions until the end. He had specifically and openly ordered that the affairs of his Gaudiya Math be maintained by a 12-man governing body, which the devotees should select amongst themselves. Right? 12-man, so that was the GBC. Finally, he had said, "Please accept my blessings to you all, present and absent. Please bear in mind that our sole duty and religion is to spread and propagate service to the Lord and his devotees." At 5:30 a.m. on January 1st, he breathed his last. Word very soon reached Abhay in Bombay. His immediate response was to cry with grief. No more the joy of an anticipated meeting. No more trips to Calcutta or Vrindavan. On the plea of business, just to see the tall, commanding form of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, the evangelic angel. This sense of never meeting again was difficult to bear. Philosophically, Abhay knew that there was no reason to lament. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had come into the world to execute the mission of Lord Chaitanya, and now it was required that he leave the place and go to another, where he would again engage in the same activity. Yet, even armed with this philosophy, Abhay felt all alone. His two great well-wishers were gone, his father and now his spiritual master. But he felt grateful that he had received a special mercy, a final instruction just 2 weeks before his spiritual master's departure. Abhay read his letter again and again. there would not be another. The intimate talks and meetings were now gone, but by this letter especially, Abhay would live in the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The letter had come just in time. Now he knew for certain, no matter what anyone else said, how to please the spiritual master and stay linked with Krishna. Following his order, he would conquer the feeling of loss at the disappearance of his most affectionate well-wisher.
Right, because he had asked how to be engaged in service, because he wasn't a brahmachari, a sannyasi, he wasn't a mat member. And so then how to be involved? So in consideration of this, he said, become a very good and established English preacher. Right? So being that, so he could do that anywhere. He didn't tell him move into the mat or now you're a grihasta, but later on move it. No, he never said any of that. He just said, you preach in the English language. Right? Preach to the general mass, teach to the philosophers, you know, it means all your academics and other people who think they're very intellectual, and preach to the religionists, those who feel that they have a faith and they have a calling and they know what they're supposed to be doing in life, and, you know, in this way then practicing themselves or trying to get others to also follow. So that could be done anywhere at any time. So that means even if the God brothers of that tell them whatever, they have their ideas, but he has his instructions. So therefore, this is then what Srila Prabhupada did. Right? He developed that. He printed his magazines in English. They were always in English. Right? Then went to the West, who was preaching in English, would come to India, bring all those, you know, English-speaking people here, like that, and then, you know, everything expands. Yes? Chapter 5, The War. Under the circumstances since 1936 up to now, I was simply speculating whether I shall venture this difficult task, and that without any means and capacity. But as none have discouraged me, I have now taken courage to take up this work. Srila Prabhupada, back to Godhead magazine. Right, so that's the quote for this chapter. The fire in the mat, you know, from what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, broke out almost immediately. A senior disciple said that there should be one acharya who would be the spiritual successor to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and who would perform all initiations and settle all controversies. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had never said that. He had never called for one acharya. Rather, he had instructed the members of the Gaudiya Mat to form a governing body of 12 men and carry on a concerted effort. But that instruction was abandoned, and the suggestion that there be one leader took hold. A single person instead of 12 should take charge, and now it became a rush for who? So he had just seen it because this way you can expand. You have one person, that's nice. But if you have 12 persons, then it goes even better. So you have 12 persons who are preaching and doing all this and cooperating, that works. Of course, if you look at it, simplistically it looks, if you have one person, they make all the decisions, this, that, that's nice. That's okay, great, as long as everybody accepts that one person, right? Two, it's all right if that was the order, but it wasn't. But it just seems easier. So the person who suggested it, though they were a very good philosopher and preacher, they were a non-manager to the ultimate degree, like that. So therefore, any complication in management, like 12 people having to sit together, having to come to some kind of understanding, you know, this person didn't like that because he wasn't a manager. He couldn't relate to this. So then he said, wouldn't it be easier if there's just one person? Right? And so because of this, then the whole mat actually broke into pieces. So instead of being, you know, one mat with 12 managers, then it became actually not one mat, but actually maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 branches, if not more, of one of the same mat. And then all of them
act on the principle. There's one acharya, but now they don't cooperate. Whereas at GBC, they would have to cooperate. You understand? So we see ISKCON's going on after so many years of Srila Prabhupada going. But the Mat's still moving forward. Why? Because they still work on the principle of the GBC. Well, the Gaudiya Mat within, some say 2 years, some say eight, but here it says almost immediately, so I guess the 2 years would be more appropriate. But 2 years, and then the Mat just broke apart. Like that. So all that work that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did, now it's all over who's in charge of that. So that's the part, thing now. Two parties contested. Ananta Vasudev, one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's leading preachers, was ambitious, and he pressed his claim with a group of influential sannyasi supporters. Another man, Kunja Bihari, shrewdly went after the properties. He had been a leading administrator after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, so he didn't bother with all this, who wants this and that. He just went to the courts and just got control of all the properties. Kunja Bihari, he was very special. He was a grihastha, but he's the one that came when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was chanting for 10 years ten crores or something names? Yeah, something like that. He was chanting. So he had, I think, just finished that. And he came and just out of the middle of nowhere, you know, unintroduced, just came and said, I have a place in Calcutta, you come stay with us and start your mission in Calcutta, preach. Well, if you sit out here, then who will get the benefit? But if you come into Calcutta, then somebody will get the benefit. So no matter what anybody thought of Kunja Bihari, then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would, just say, leave him alone. Because it was because of him, the Mat started. Like that, he was actually the first one. So now because he was a good administrator, then he would do that. So he legally went and tried to get all the properties. And then Ananta Vasudev, he was an ambitious preacher, and so then he was trying to get control of everything through, getting the support of all the leading preachers and everything like that. He never even thought about the administrative side. Kunja Bihari would take everything away from underneath. And now he claimed, Kunja Bihari, ownership of the palatial temple in Calcutta as well as the other properties and assets of the Indian-wide Gaudiya Mat. Right, he came with his papers. He actually had court orders that they were all in his care, but nobody cared. You know, he could wave his papers around, but who cared? Although in his will, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had expressed the desire that his disciples select a governing board to manage all properties and funds of the Gaudiya Mat, Kunja Bihari contested the will's legitimacy. He and his supporters argued that since Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had received the properties on behalf of God, he was not their rightful owner and therefore could not determine their future ownership. Thus he and others disputed over the legal and theological aspects of the former Acharya's position. Right, so it just becomes, in the name of getting control of the Mats, then they have to prove that their spiritual master wasn't actually had some influence or some desire about it, because, they were spiritual, so how can he say where they should go? But if they're spiritual, why is he in the mundane courts fighting over who's in charge of them? Right? So this is the same mistake he's making. He's trying to blame his spiritual master for having made the same mistake. So this kind of disciple is not very, inspired in the way of spirituality.
Shortly after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's passing away, litigation had begun. Ananta Vasudev, supported by a majority of the members of the Gaudiya Mat, had claimed that he, as the next acharya, was the owner and director of the properties, right? Bhaktisiddhanta never said he's the owner. He just was saying they should go that way. Now he's saying he's the owner. But although Kunja Bihari had only a few supporters, he defied the majority by pressing his claim through lawyers in court. Kunja Bihari and his men had possession of the Gaudiya Mat and the temples in Mayapur. Vasudev's party captured other buildings. Quarreling and fistfights broke out. The preaching of the Gaudiya Mat stopped.
So, therefore, if anybody ever comes and is making some comments about ISKCON and this and that, and, about their
Watering the plants. Okay. You know, people have differences of opinion and this and that. It'll be there. We're conditioned souls. Everyone's trying to become perfect. No one's perfect. So always these things go. But here, the preaching just stopped, and they were actually having physical fights. And it's not just then, even I don't know how long back, 10 years or something back, there was a huge fight between the Chaitanya Mat and the Yogpeet. That the fighting was so intense and that I'm not sure that people didn't get killed or badly injured like that. And so what happened is that the government took over. The government stepped in and became the person to manage the place. So now those two, unless it's changed now, but they're managed by the local government. You know, and they're thinking that they're doing some good preaching or something. You understand? So the cooperation, you're strong, and as soon as this happens, then other parties who are stronger will naturally come in. So this is the result. He wanted to create a preaching mission, and they're simply fighting over who's in charge. Right? And so you had these two parties, and then either from then or even just shortly after when they saw what was happening, then many of the preachers, they just moved out and started their own preaching just so the preaching would go on. But because it's not a concerted effort, it never became that big. Abhai's inability to take part in the activities of the Gaudiya Mat was suddenly in his favor. Right? That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, leave him alone, he's going to do some nice stuff. Because they were saying, no, he should move into the Mat. Because if he was in the Mat, they'd demand that he take sides. He's a grihastha, he lives outside. What is it his business, right? So if they come and say this, that, they'll say, you know, I can't get involved. I have my business, I have my family, like that. He had always been more a visitor than a member at the Mat, and at least externally, more the grihastha businessman than a missionary worker. This automatically put him at a distance from the fray. Of course, he was associated with the Mats in Bombay and Allahabad, but he had no managerial position, no claims to ownership, and no role in the litigation. Nor did he desire to take sides in the struggle for power. Like many of the other disciples, he was mortified to see that his spiritual master's instructions for cooperation had been disregarded and his mission thrown into a legal dispute. Abhai knew that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had wanted the leaders to work cooperatively, and so he could not sympathize with the warring factions. Both parties were an insult to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Now, he wanted cooperation, so you just don't get involved. You don't take sides. People may press that you have to be this side. You just don't get involved in these things. When it comes to this kind of stuff, you don't get involved. It's a philosophical point. Yes, then you can take a strong position. But the thing is, in this, and fighting over who's the managers, then you have to be very, very careful. Because both of them were, you know, practicing devotees and that. It wasn't like that, you know, one group was not practicing and wanted to turn it into a cinema or something. You know, it's like, these are practicing devotees. But you just don't get involved like that. That makes sense. And he points out they're both an insult because neither of them understand the position that Bhaktisiddhanta wanted. So, Srila Prabhupada. But he wanted to preach. Although becoming a very good English preacher was something he was meditating on more actively than actively doing, the Gaudiya Mat would logically have been the vehicle for his preaching. He had already contributed articles to the Gaudiya Mat's publications and had been working with his godbrothers at the Allahabad and Bombay centers. Naturally thought of serving his spiritual master in terms of serving within his spiritual master's mission. But the Gaudiya Mat, which had always been known for pure, bold preaching of the message of Lord Chaitanya, was now becoming known for embroiled factions. As the Gaudiya Mat broke down, he was also affected. Under the present circumstances, how could he carry out his spiritual master's order to preach? Previously, the main obstacle to his preaching had been family commitments, but now the obstacles were compounded. Now he had to wait helplessly for the outcome of this struggle. What would Krishna bring about? So he was naturally thinking is that you already have an infrastructure, they're already preaching, so now he'll preach and do programs in English and preach to the English-speaking persons. And then in this way, then expand everything, and everything becomes, the mutt itself becomes glorified. The mutt itself becomes expanded. But as we see, is that it didn't exactly work out that way. So now he's trying to think, what is he going to do? Right? How is he going to be able to preach? Yes?
Mark, is it because of this reason that Srila Prabhupada said that the way you express that you love me is by...
Yes, yes. You'll show your love for Srila Prabhupada by cooperating, yes. Yeah, because otherwise here, they didn't cooperate, and then therefore the whole mat fell apart. So you could see is that it wasn't actually very... It wasn't appropriate in Krishna consciousness. It didn't give a good result like that. You know, they'll claim the heritage, but as far as organizationally goes, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. 1938. His Bombay business diminishing. Prabhupada, Abhai, now 42. Moved back to Calcutta with his wife and family and rented a house at 6 Sitakanta Banerjee Lane. The street was but a narrow lane lined on either side with 3-story houses. His office was on the first floor, facing the street. The family lived upstairs. He rented the adjoining building, number 7, and on the first floor operated a small chemical laboratory manufacturing distilled water, Day's pain liniment, Vimal tonic, Alpha, an injection for boils, and various other medicines. He also utilized a small building in the rear as part of his lab. Out front, he hung a large signboard, Abhai Charan Day and Sons, displaying a picture of a mustached Abhai Charan. That I know of, I've been told this building is just behind the Govinda Bhavan in Calcutta. That there's a little gully there, and so he's there and everything. Sometimes he would employ 2 or 3 servants to assist him, but mostly he worked alone. And he would deliver the glass jugs of distilled water to agents, such as Bengal Chemical and Gluconet. He printed a brochure advertising Day's pain liniment. Quote, good for relieving gout, rheumatism, and all pains. And if one wanted to be free of reoccurring diseases like rheumatism and gout, Abhai's brochure directed that, in addition to using Day's pain liniment, one refrain from alcohol and all sorts of drinking or intoxicating habits. Food and drink should be very simple and innocent, such as vegetables and milk. In other words, be vegetarian, don't drink alcohol, and you'll get rid of your rheumatism, gout, and like that. The new Calcutta business enjoyed an early success, but Abhai didn't have his heart in it. It was a duty. He had to do it to maintain his family. His new acquaintances in Calcutta found him to be a devotee of God at heart, a businessman, a family man, but more concerned with writing and preaching than with business and family. Chandi Mukherjee, a neighbor from nearby Bihari Street. He was interested only in devotional activities, and he did his business only to maintain the family. He didn't seem interested in the profit motive, in accumulating money or becoming a rich man. Charan Mukherjee, Abhai's next-door neighbor. Abhai Charan Day was always a very patient listener to every illogical argument that anybody, including myself, would bring to him. Not knowing philosophy, I would illogically present so many arguments, and Mr. Day would always very patiently listen. Nothing agitated him. He was always very calm, and he taught me about God. He would speak only of Krishna. He was translating the Gita and was maintaining his business. Neighbors would often see him sitting on his cot in the front room. He would read his spiritual master's books and sometimes recite the Sanskrit shlokas out loud. He liked to discuss philosophy with anyone who came by. His family, keeping mostly upstairs, Abhai would sit alone in the downstairs front room,
dressed in dhoti and kurta, or sometimes a dhoti and only a vest. Often he would be at his writing, while outside the door, his children played with the children of the Ganguly family, who lived in the rear apartment of the same family, same building. The neighbors lived openly in a kind of joint neighborhood family. And Abhay talked freely with the other neighbors, but of Vaishnava philosophy and only rarely of business. Mr. Ganguly found Abhay's speech scholastic and always very philosophical. Abhay was absorbed in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and even in brief conversations, he would refer to Lord Krishna and to Bhagavad Gita's description of Lord Krishna as the basis of both the material and spiritual worlds. While working in his laboratory or receiving a delivery of empty bottles from the Muslim bottle merchant, or going out to sell his medicine, he would be talking or thinking about God. In those days, for a person in Calcutta to be interested in God consciousness was not so unusual. Abhay found even a man like Abdullah, the Muslim bottle merchant, to be very religious. One day Abhay asked Abdullah, who had once been very poor but had become rich by his business, "Now you've got money, so how are you going to use your money?" The bottle merchant replied, "My dear sir, I have an intention of constructing a mosque." Meanwhile, the war of the Gaudiya Math raged on. Both factions were ill-motivated. Yeah, so I guess this means the, because this is 38, Bhaktisiddhanta 11, 36. So that means it was basically immediately. So this thing of 2 years that the GBC was there and then it broke down, it appears it's already broken down before that. So 2 years was probably just to make it look a little bit better. Both factions were ill-motivated and both deviated from the instructions of the spiritual master. The very act of trying to determine ownership of the properties through legal action meant that the God brothers were disobeying the expressed desire of the spiritual master, as stated in his will. The litigation continued year after year, but the legal wrangling could not bring them together or purify them. One court ruled in favor of Ananta Vasudeva, but then a higher court awarded 2/3 of the Math's properties to Kunjavihari and 1/3 to Vasudeva. Still, although Vasudeva had fewer properties, he inspired more followers. He seemed to them more intent on reviving the preaching of the Gaudiya Math. But when Vasudeva subsequently fell down from the principles of sannyas by going off with a woman, the groups broke further to pieces. Well, first he became a Babaji. Like that. So he actually left the Gaudiya whole scene and became a Babaji. I think a Radhakund Babaji. Then with time, then this whole thing with this lady, and it's said that this lady actually poisoned him. Like that. She got tired of him and poisoned him. Like that. But if you ask those who still have some connection to Vasudeva, Ananta Vasudeva, who became, I think, Puri Maharaj, some variety of Puri Maharaj. Then, like that. Right. So then, they'll say, no, you know, he went into Samadhi, and all nice things they'll say about him, because they themselves are connected with these Babajis and all that. So they're not even considered part of the Gaudiya Math. Like that. So even within the Gaudiya Math, they consider branches of the Gaudiya Math not even part of the Gaudiya Math. So, like that. Most of the sannyasis continued to maintain their principles, but many now left the jurisdiction of the two contending factions in disgust. Individuals formed their own ashrams, Gaudiya Mission, Chaitanya Gaudiya Math, and others. You go down the road, you know, Sri Saraswat Gaudiya Math, Chaitanya Saraswat Gaudiya Math, Gaudiya Saraswat Chaitanya Math. It's just like that between our front gate and Hulargat. It means actually where you get on the boat. There's at least 11 or 12 different maths that have no connection with each other. Like that. That's that way. Then if you go the other way, then there'll be even more. The unified entity of Gaudiya Math as an all-India mission consisting of many temples, several presses, and hundreds of devotees working cooperatively under one leadership ceased to exist. God brothers continued to uphold the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as they had received them from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But because they were meant to work together, they lacked their former united potency. Illusions of proprietorship and prestige has superseded the spiritual master's order. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's cause, a worldwide movement for propagating Lord Chaitanya's teachings, collapsed. As it is today, technically speaking, on their own, there's still not a worldwide preaching mission. Today, they're still confined to India. Some mats have done preaching in the West, even established centers in the West, but all those centers are actually done by Prabhupada's disciples that have gone to those mats and helped those mats. Not one of them has been opened by local devotees and that. They just haven't. It's unfortunate. So this is the whole thing. It's combined together. It was supposed to work, but they allowed it to fall apart somehow or another for their own purposes, so one cannot in any way, shape, or form support it. And, you know, and therefore then Srila Prabhupada, though he tried to work with them, it couldn't, and so then eventually he had to start his own mission. So for them, they just saw another mat, you know, so it's all Gaudiya Math. And so they had no problem with Prabhupada's, you know, mission for a long time. But then after it got established and devotees were becoming mature enough that they could take serious responsibility, then Prabhupada established a GBC. And when they established the GBC, then the Gaudiya Math, you know, very much turned against them, because now they understood if he establishes a GBC, he's a completely separate entity. He's not Gaudiya Math anymore. You know? But technically speaking, you could say that we're actually the Gaudiya Math, and they're all, you know, side branches that are doing their own independent thing. Because technically speaking, we're the Gaudiya Math. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.